Hello and welcome once more to the program. I'm Joe Bourne, and for the next 90 minutes, it's just you and me with a program today featuring a special guest. In fact, two special guests. Our first guest will be a guest disc jockey, and he is the president of Indiana University and a big jazz fan, I understand. He is Michael McRobbie. We'll bring him on in just a few moments, and President McRobbie will be telling us what his favorites are among the many jazz greats, and we'll be playing some selections from his favorite recordings. A little later on, we'll be joined by David Baker, director of the Jazz Studies Department here at Indiana University, and he'll tell us about the upcoming concert, the Big Band Extravaganza, which all happens tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock. Jive at 5, one of the recordings done for the Verve label by the Count Basie Band in the early 1950s, reissued just recently on the complete Count Basie small group studio recordings the master takes, and that's on Jazz Connections Records. Our guest in the studio today has never been on our program before, and I'm really glad to have him. He is the president of Indiana University, and as such is also my boss, that makes it a little uncomfortable, but otherwise I'm very glad to have President Michael McRobbie in to visit us. Thank you for coming in, President McRobbie. I appreciate it.
I'm delighted, Joe. I should say at the outset a couple of things. Firstly, the time your show on isn't a great time for me in the afternoons. I can't listen to it all that often, but I do when I can, and I've admired it for many years. Uh-huh. The breadth of your knowledge and the quality of the music you play is outstanding, and you shouldn't feel nervous having me here for a number of reasons, one of them being that you know infinitely more about jazz than I do.
Well, I don't know, but we'll find out about that, I guess. Well, we have some of the same tastes. I've seen your list of a few of the items you brought in. Obviously, you do have an appreciation for Miles Davis, as well as some people who are even more modern than Miles, Ornette Coleman, Carla Bley. George Russell also is on the list, I'm glad mm-hmm. to see. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's the influence of David Baker in that particular instance.
Actually not, and I could maybe get to that a little bit later. Let me say about my own interest in jazz. I have to, in the interest of full disclosure, say that I have absolutely zero musical training. I know nothing formally technically about music, but I'm a music lover. I love jazz, I love classical music, and being a child of the 60s, I'm also very fond of lots of rock and roll. But I have a reasonable ear, and I'm opinionated. I know what I like.
Yeah, good.
And as in rock and roll, where I've only ever felt that any music worth listening to is from the Beatles onwards, and then for not very long after them. in jazz, to me, jazz really started with Kind of Blue, but it's not with Miles Davis's Kind of Blue, but it's not. I realize it doesn't really, modern jazz really doesn't start there, and where it actually starts is highly complicated and so on.
Oh, sure.
And when I was sort of thinking about a playlist here, I didn't actually know where one of my favorite Miles Davis CDs fitted into things. And I discovered that, in fact, it was the 2 years before Kind of Blue. And I uh-huh. think of it stylistically as being very much the same. And that's the, and here I'm going to butcher French, my apologies to the French and Italian department for this, but the Ascensure pour la Echafaud, translated as either Lift to the Scaffold, I'm told better translated as Ascent to the Scaffold, which was the soundtrack to a Louis Malle movie starring Jean Moreau that Miles Davis and the band that he then had, or the sidemen he had, put down in one night. I think you know the story.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's and apparently they did it while there was a single loop of the various parts that they composed music for as they went. I think it's a very not well known. Obviously, you know it. Probably all your listeners know it.
But, well, I have it only on LP and a fairly recent issue on LP.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it's one of Miles's best, and there are the various takes there. So I've chosen from that a piece called Nuit sur la Champs-Élysées, which is, I gather, Night on the Champs-Élysées.
Right.
And that's my first part, and I think it, even though it predates Kind of Blue by 2 years, it stylistically to me is very, very similar to some of the finer parts of Kind of Blue.
And what's nice about this also is that he has some European musicians on here of note. Bernie Wieland, one of the finest of the tenor saxophonists in Europe, René Ertriger on piano, Pierre Michelot, the bassist. You can pick up just about any recording made in Europe by an American musician, and he's on it. I don't know how he managed to make so many dates.
Incredible.
And then he was also involved in the making of Round Midnight, the movie,
and was
on the soundtrack to that.
Right. Much in demand, yeah.
So he was the right guy to get, and then Kenny Clarke on drums, of course, was living, an American living in Paris then.
And Miles clearly liked Paris. He spent a lot of time there, too, over the years.
Lots of things to like in Paris.
Yeah,
the Champs-Élysées being one of them, of course. Let's listen to the night on the Champs-Élysées then from this music soundtrack, movie soundtrack done by Miles in 57. This would be the next take of the same Nuit sur les Champs-Élysées, and we heard the second take. Générique, it's also called, and I think I have it under that name on yet another CD, sampler of Miles Davis. The movie, as you mentioned, President McGrabby, is not one that's been in circulation very much. I've never seen it shown anywhere. So,
nor have I.
Don't know anything about it, except that it has some great music on the soundtrack. So that was an interesting selection, one that we have not heard certainly on the radio very much, but the CD is available on Fontana Records, and I think I had the LP on yet another label. It's interesting that so much of this music that was made here in America is now available through European labels.
Right.
More readily than it is in the United States. And now with, of course, with the internet, you can order it very easily.
Although I should tell you, Joe, I was going to save the story for a little later in the show, but I should tell you that I discovered not that particular pressing that I have, but discovered the existence of the CD itself when I was actually in Tokyo with a very good friend of mine, a German computer scientist who was a great jazz fan. And he wanted to buy it, and he had not been able to buy it in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one wonderful afternoon when we walked the record or the CD shops in Akihabara in Tokyo. And I remember that he bought that and said, "You've got to get this." And I bought another one that I'm going to talk about a bit later. Then eventually I remembered it, and I eventually bought it. But he had to go to Tokyo to get it.
Well, I know that Tokyo had the first compact discs and both new music and reissues. And we began hearing about that in the States here, how what a great selection they had here, there. So I'm wondering, are you telling the truth when you say you exited the record shop with just one
CD? Oh, no, I exited with a lot, but I didn't at that stage pick that up. But I remember him saying, "You should get this." And then eventually I did, and I've had great respect for his taste ever since.
Oh, good, good. I went to one in France on my only visit there and got a lot of American reissues on CD that I hadn't seen anywhere else, too. And it was a question of putting back an awful lot that I had picked up, you know, before I left. Well, the next item that you've chosen is also by Miles Davis from the album that everyone seems to choose as either favorite album of theirs, favorite jazz album, or perhaps the one they started with. It's pretty unusual, I think, that any album can fulfill both of those roles. But how did you happen to come upon Kind of Blue?
Oh, I can't even really remember, Joe, but I came across it pretty early. But I remember thinking that this really defined this, and then the evolutions of jazz from it defined the kind of jazz that I personally really liked.
Yes.
And before that, it became less attractive to me, although, as I noted, there's quite a lot of Miles that's superb from before then. And it is one of the most played, maybe the most played jazz CD record ever made, recording ever made.
Well, you know,
but it is so definitive that I felt I just had to choose a piece from it.
It is definitive. And as you may know, in the Indiana Daily Student, currently we're conducting a poll. They are, along with us, mm-hmm. of everyone's favorite jazz records. Mm-hmm. And you can mail it in or go to the web at WFIU.org and vote for your favorite. Well, the last time we got a count, this one was on top by quite a bit, because so many people like it and know it.
Before you play it, I was going to ask one question. I believe the first solo was John Coltrane, and the second solo was sax solo was Cannonball Adderley. And to me, and here again, I show my amateur status, but to me, the second solo is the more dynamic, and I always thought that was Coltrane, but I gather it's not Coltrane, that's Cannonball Adderley.
It's Cannonball, yeah. I think it is, yes. Yeah. They had such different styles, but were so involved in their own search for the music that is very easy eventually to pick them out once you've heard them a couple of times.
But Coltrane, I think, became much more confident almost later.
He did, very much.
Right.
Well, let's hear Miles Davis, Kinda Blue, the album, and we're going to listen to, have we chosen So What?
So
the first
What, of course.
Track. Yes, uh-huh. From Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and Cannonball Adderley, along with Paul Chambers, Jimmy Cobb, and the pianist on this one is Bill Evans. So What, from the album Kinda Blue, Miles Davis and his quintet, with Cannonball Adderley and John Coltrane, Bill Evans, Paul Chambers, and Jimmy Cobb. And we'll be back in just a moment with our guest, President Michael McRobbie of Indiana University, a jazz fan who has brought along some of his favorite jazz recordings to play for you. Production support for Friday's edition of Just You and Me comes from Pizza X, previously known as Pizza Express. Pizza X, continuing the tradition of specialty pizzas and service. More information online at pizzax.bloomington.com. This is member-supported public radio, WFIU in Bloomington. I'm Joe Bourne. It's Just You and Me. It's a minute before four, and we are celebrating Jazz Appreciation Month with a number of events. We had a wonderful presentation last night, a concert at Finch's Brasserie with Pat Harbison and friends from the jazz quartet, and we were able to listen to some great live jazz there. And today we have Jazz on Recordings with our guest, President Michael McRobbie. President McRobbie, that recording of Miles Davis, it is a classic, and I think just about anybody who listens to jazz recognizes that now.
Right, right.
And recognizes the mood, music immediately. Another thing that you've chosen is the one concert in which Miles actually went back and played some of the music that he had previously done. He always resisted doing that.
Right, he did. He did. Yeah, he to the end of his life, he continued to change. And but this one I've chosen, this is one of my absolute favorites. It's called Miles and Quincy Live at Montreux, and was recorded, I believe, the last recording he ever made in 1991. He died a few weeks after this, sadly. What's interesting is that the year after he made Kinda Blue, he did Sketches of Spain, which, of course, was a big band arrangement of a number of pieces, including Concierto, Alain Jouez, and some other pieces. I've always found that a little flat, even though I know it's a famous and a well-respected CD. But there's a piece on it, Celia, which is okay, I think, on the 1960 version, but which is quite spectacular on this live version, which is really Quincy Jones taking the Gil Evans role and then Miles. They say in the liner notes that he needed to be helped out by Wallace Roney because he was fairly in bad health at that stage. Sure. But David Baker gave me a DVD of this, and if you watch it, you know Miles is not being helped out. You know, Miles is playing.
Oh, really?
It's very powerful. Uh-huh. Yeah, very powerful. So this is Celia from that wonderful, wonderful CD, which is one of the ones I bought in Tokyo in 1993.
I see the Japanese liner notes here. I was going to ask you to read them to me, but I won't do that. Let's go to Celia, live at Montreal Jazz Festival. Quincy Jones directing the orchestra with Miles Davis, the trumpeter. Davies, Quincy Jones, at the Montreal Festival, the 25th anniversary of that festival in 1991, and I think that was Claude Nobbs, the longtime producer of the Montreal Festival, doing the announcements at the end. Solia, the closing part of Sketches of Spain and of the concert, with Quincy Jones conducting the Gil Evans Orchestra. The George Grunts Concert Jazz Band also performed as a part of that. Miles and Quincy live at Montreux, and that is certainly one worth looking for. It's on the Warner Brothers record label, unlike most of his other recordings, which were on Columbia. Thank you for choosing that one, President McGarvey. That was a very moving performance, as you mentioned, and one that I was not familiar with. I had listened to portions of this, but not that. And was so glad, again, that Miles was willing to come by and revisit the music of his life, knowing that he was near the end of his life and certainly the end of his performing life.
That was the last piece he ever recorded, that piece.
Yes, the last one. Right. Mm-hmm. It was a huge loss, and one of those artists, of course, who was always ahead of the curve. And if people today say that they like Miles Davis, they have to be pretty specific about what Miles they're talking about.
Right.
And one person doesn't necessarily like all eras of Miles. I prefer the earlier things, and so was glad that he was going back to that at that point.
It was a magnificent concert to revisit all those old standards like that. It was just superb.
It really was.
Yeah.
Well, we've now moved through Miles Davis and are ready to move to a different artist, and it turns out that this artist had David Baker in his band, and yet you evidently came upon George Russell without having that relationship. George Russell, who had his own theory of music, picked up a young band here in Indiana to play the music that he had composed, and that band included David Baker on trombone.
That's right, yeah. I knew of George Russell as the so-called theoretician of modal jazz, the style of jazz that kind of blue introduced, and he wrote a famous work, which I confess I've never read. But it's a daunting title of The Lydian Chromatic Concept of Tonal Organization. Mm-hmm. But quite famous, I gather, among the musical experts in that area. And when I discovered George Russell and started listening to him, I discovered that David Baker had played with George Russell. Mm-hmm. And David then, of course, was famously, I think, playing the trombone. And this is this CD is called Stratus Funk, made in 1960. George Russell on piano, but David Baker on trombone, and a number of other people sidemen on this. Once you listen for David's trombone playing on this, it really, really is superb. And the other thing about this is that this piece is called Bent Eagle from Stratus Funk, And it was composed by the very young Carla Bley, who was 22 when she composed this piece. Indeed. And she was a student of George Russell.
Mm-hmm. And I had not noticed that Carla's composition was in there. So I'm so glad you pointed it out to me, because I enjoy her later material. And as you say, she was very young at this point. On here, trumpeter Al Kiger, who attended Indiana University. Tenor saxophonist David Young, who grew up in Indianapolis and passed away just recently as well. The drummer Joe Hunt is from Pittsburgh. Chuck Israels, a well-known bass player, played with a great variety of people. So what you have are some very fine musicians here. Of course, David Baker included, and we'll hear them doing Bent Eagle from Stratus Funk. From Stratus Funk, the album by the George Russell Sextet, the sextet including a young cat on trombone by the name of Dave Baker. And David Baker, of course, now the jazz studies professor here at Indiana University, director of that program. Al Kiger on trumpet, Dave Young on tenor sax, the late Dave Young, Chuck Israels on bass, and drummer Joe Hunt. And David Baker has just joined us in the studio. David, thank you very much for coming in today. It's good to see you again.
Thank you. Glad to be here, and particularly with the anomaly of our times, President McRobbie, somebody, a president of a university who knows as much about jazz as most of the people that I hang out with.
Isn't that wonderful? And yeah, he wasn't prevented from becoming the president by knowing all that. Evidently. So we're very glad to have both of you here at the microphone. And of course, what happened is that initially President McRobbie chose a date that didn't work out and chose another date, and this worked, and then this was the date I was to have you on, and didn't know whether it would all work together, but it did.
Absolutely thrilled.
Oh, the thrill is all mine, believe you me. David, these people I'm playing, David knows, David played with.
Right. And he just happened to walk in right before his own solo.
Well, just to hear you speak so eloquently and logically about the transformational things that took place with Kind of Blue, you know, because that magnificent year when it looks like the whole thing changed, everything from Giant Steps with Coltrane to the Lenox School of Jazz with Ornette Coleman to Bill Evans, and all of this in one year. Yeah. And none of those people are left but the drummer.
Right.
And it was the transformative year, really, wasn't it?
Yes, it was indeed.
It was very much so. And for me, that was when I was just becoming a teenager, beginning high school. And so it was a transformative time for myself and the music, and, of course, John Kennedy becoming president at that time, too. The whole world was changing in a great way. I'm really glad that you came in, David, for one reason, because I finally got a copy on record of Doodle Oodle, which you've been playing at the Big Band Extravaganza, a Basie tune that I could never find anywhere. You always play that, and I could never find it. But it's on this album here called Basie Land on LP.
Well, it wasn't one of his more popular tunes.
It's a good one. It just wasn't, didn't come out of greatest hits.
Put some of our better players together.
I always get a kick out of listening to it. It's just that happens, David, often. I find that the record companies think completely differently than educators when it comes to what they put on the market.
That's why they got money.
That's why they got money. Well, but they're being put out of business by computers, and you're not yet.
I never will be.
No, I don't think so.
But you know, I was amazed at just listening to Dr. McGrobby and listening to how widespread your tastes are. Eclectic. I mean, like, obviously, your love for Miles is there immediately, the passion. But the very fact that you see all of the tangential events that came about because of Miles or because of people who thought like Miles.
Right. Very kind, David. But I'm a mere amateur. You're the expert. And I just love this music, and I love this era in particular. And then some of the people who developed out of this era, mm-hmm. too. I do like the later Miles, as I said, and of course not everybody does, but there was a kind of almost a logical development there, and then he went back to the beginning.
Well, it's amazing that was really strange because Quincy talked him into coming back.
Yeah, right.
Well, I remember when we watched the video
you
together.
You gave it to me. It's fantastic.
You know, Miles had said he was never going to go back, right. And I think Q convinced him into coming back. And it turned out, as you pointed out, to be his swan song.
Right.
Because I think that really was his last recording.
Yeah. And he was dead a few weeks later.
Yeah.
And he, I think, you know, perhaps he knew that. Perhaps he knew that was the last opportunity.
I was thinking, because I've been talking to Jimmy Heath about 6 months ago, one of the most embarrassing moments of my life was with Miles. Or actually, Bill Evans. We were at Lenox School of Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Evans had brought down the tape. I don't know if I told you this.
Nah.
The tape of Kind of Blue before it was ever released.
Oh, you're kidding.
Now, I'm the student, one of the students there, or not, and some of us. And we're just enthralled with all of these guys. Miles wasn't there, but Bill Evans and Modern Jazz Quartet, and these guys are talking about the piece. Now, we had said quietly, as we should have, until it got to Freddie Freeloader. I hadn't said anything, so when it was over, I said, Mr. Evans, that's the best you've played on the whole album. Oh, my God. And Bill, and there was no way to turn it into a joke.
Right, right.
So I didn't see him again, Bill, you know, to really talk to until he came down here to the Blue, whatever that thing is downtown, the club here in Bloomington.
The Bluebird, yeah.
The Bluebird,
yeah.
And he was with Eddie Gomez, so when I walked in the door, he's on the other side of the room, and he says, "Hey, David, how am I sounding now?" And he never let me live it down.
Oh, I guess. Yeah, that was Whitten Kelly.
The one piece he didn't play.
And the only one.
That's right. Oh, that's a great story.
We would have all made the same mistake, David, but we're glad it was you.
Gee, thanks.
Well, we're going to move on to another item that you've chosen, Mr. McGrobby, and that is Carla Bley. And this is Flora Carnivore, and that's one of the albums that I'm not familiar with, I admit it, but it was in our library. David Brent Johnson pulled it out, and I didn't think that we had it. It was done in 1989 with her group, which included Lou Soloff, best trumpeter you could get in the studio, Bob Stewart on trombone. Gary Valenti is in here from her band, and it's an outstanding group playing her compositions, all her compositions.
Right.
And the one you've chosen is the title track.
Right.
So what is it that attracts you about this?
Well, it's interesting. The last track we played, of course, was composed by Carla Bley, and to me, again, I don't confess to be an expert like David. In fact, I'm embarrassed sitting beside David here, but there seemed to be almost a logical progression from the style of the George Russell group through to her many years later. She's almost she's carrying the flame forward, and I think the quality of her work. I mean, it has a sort of a European flavor to it. I actually always thought she was European until one day I discovered she was American.
Yeah.
But you tend to think of her as being someone who's performed an enormous amount in Europe. There's another thing about this too. It's on the white, but it's on the ECM label. And so it's another one of my loves, which are ECM recordings, of which I have many.
Yes.
And some I've bought just because they're ECM, and I just love the quality of Manfred Eicher's production, too. And this I don't think this was produced by Manfred Eicher, but this is an ECM recording.
And I think that she had an arrangement with ECM for to distribute her things eventually.
Right.
But yes, Manfred had such a simplicity of design visually too, and those
there's a real art to the cover designs for all those ECM records.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you can recognize one immediately.
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to listen to Fleur Carnivore. Was there something about this specific piece?
Oh, it really, that I thought that this really is, it really captures the Carla Bley style, the Carla Bley big band style for me, this piece. I went through quite a few pieces, but this is the piece I thought really, really exemplifies, you know, her style, as I said, as someone who's progressed from the types of things she composed for George Russell.
And were you familiar with her, David, at the time that you and George Russell performed her music?
I knew her through Paul Bley.
Through Paul, yeah.
Yeah, Paul recorded in the Jazz in the Space Age with us. And then Carla brought in all those tunes like Benny Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them was a jam. And then she hooked up with Steve Swallow and some of the others to form the JCOA.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But yes, I share the love. Mm. Most people don't even know who she is, though.
Hey, it's amazing, isn't it? It's a superb.
It is, and they began their own label and were successful in doing so. So they must have been successful in Europe more so than in the States, perhaps.
She's one of the great women of jazz, in my view. Yeah.
Well, let's listen to Carla Bley here on Just You and Me. Carnivore, Carla Bley, in performance with her orchestra. And the soloists there included trumpeter Lou Soloff and the saxophonist, whom I don't know, is Wolfgang Puschning. Is that a familiar name to you?
No, I confess I don't know that song.
Mm-hmm. And he's a part of the orchestra, who is German, obviously. Karen Mantler, her daughter, was performing on harmonica, organ, vibes, and chimes. Karen has done a couple of albums of her own, and she bears a remarkable resemblance to her mother.
Hmm.
You seen her? No?
I've never seen her. No.
So I guess that she is married to Mike, or was married to Michael Mantler at some point, and that's their daughter.
That's their daughter, right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. She has the same straight hair as her mom. Straight blonde hair, really remarkable. Yeah, visually she's an interesting woman too, because she doesn't seem to take herself terribly seriously, but takes her music seriously. And that's an interesting dynamic, I think, for a musician.
Right.
We have listened to music of Carla Bley, two pieces by her, one early and one late, and now you've chosen the next piece by Eberhard Weber. And as I mentioned, this is not one that I know. That's what's great about having you on as a guest, Michael, is that you have chosen many things that I would not be playing today. So that is all to the better, I think.
Well, the connection to this piece, Joe, is purely that it's an ECM recording. There's no real musical connection that I can think of, although you two experts may be able to come up with one. But to me, this really exemplifies the quality of ECM recordings. And as David was saying off air, you can almost tell an ECM recording when you hear one, and nothing brings out better, I think, than this recording. Eberhard Weber is a superb bassist, and he reminds you stylistically very much of Jaco Pastorius, though not as well known. And this is reasonably well known, this recording, called The Colors of Chloe, and is normally regarded as one of his two bests. The best, the other one is Yellow Fields, I was also going to play something from, but obviously we've run out of time. But
it happens, doesn't it? Yes. It happens to me every day. and no matter what I do, that 5 o'clock.
But you can come back the next day. John.
I can come back the next day. That's true. But 5 o'clock always comes along, and it's time always to get out of the way for all things considered at that time. But David, I just wanted to ask one thing about the fact that the Big Band Extravaganza is coming up, and you have this time Brent Wallerab is leading one of the orchestras.
It's not
right?
the first time, but it's the first time since he's been, you know, on the 10-year track as right. music for us.
Mm-hmm. And you'll be playing some great music out of the swing era once more, music by
Ellington. We've located music that a lot of that's different, but it's still the same people: Benny Goodman, Jimmy Lunsford, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Tommy Dorsey.
Uh-huh.
So it's familiar fare, but it is also ever new because it's always renewable in the mind.
Oh, yes. I saw many things on the list that have not been on the program before, and I look forward to hearing those. And always look forward to see Dick Bishop as the MC, and he'll be there once more this time. And I haven't seen Dick for a while, so that'll be a pleasure. Good. It all happens on Saturday night, and it's at 8 p.m.
8 p.m.
All right. And I've given away all the free tickets I had, and so that's all done. We're going to get a crowd of people there, I'm sure.
Well, Laurie and I are going to be there, and I certainly hope many other people will be there as well. I'm sure they will.
No, I will be.
But too. I'm anxious to hear these pieces you've been talking about.
All right. Well, let's go ahead to the next piece, as you mentioned, by Eberhard Weber. He plays bass and cello and ocarina. I don't know if he does all that on this one piece or not.
Don't think he does ocarina.
No ocarina. Mm-hmm. And the band includes Ralph Hubner on drums, Peter Geiger on percussion and drums, and Rainer Bruninghaus. I hope I'm not ruining his name too much, on keyboards. And the one we're going to hear is
The Colors of Chloe itself.
The Colors of Chloe, yeah, the title track. We've been listening to The Colors of Chloe by Eberhard Weber from his ECM release, and it's called The Colors of Chloe. Our guests on the program today have been David Baker, Director of Jazz Studies here at Indiana University, and the President of Indiana University, Michael McRobbie. And thanks to each of you for spending time with us today and sparing your time to come over here and be with me on Just You and Me.
Delighted to do it, Joe. This is wonderful. And it was an honor to be here with you and with David. A real honor.
And a double win for me, too.